The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 1st of March, 2021. On the podcast today, Tim Watts, Chief Executive Officer of Shield Therapeutics, talks about their recent £25 million fundraise and what the funds will be used for. Plus, Andrew Hall, Chief Commercial Officer of Vast Resources, and Marcus Brewster, the new General Manager of its Bite Supply polymetallic mine in Romania, talk about operations and the revised mining plan. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications, talks about On the Market, Bacchanora Minerals, and Lexington Gold. And we also have a heated discussion about diversification. If you can have heat discussion about diversification. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I cover two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. You can check out those lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We can see lots of other content. In fact, there's an article there on Union Jack Oil acquires further 15% in Pedal 253. It's also SP Angel Morning View. Strategic Minerals, there's an article there. Equals secures first cryptocurrency partnership. And of course, don't forget, check out our COVID-19 index. Biggest riser on the index today is Gfinity. Oh, nope, Gene Drive, just jumped to the front there. Up 13%, Gfinity second, React Group third, E-Therapeutics fourth. So Gene Drive is up 13% to 124. Our biggest fall of the day is Dev Clever Holdings, down 5% to 28%. Hence, check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tim Watts, Chief Executive Officer of Shield Therapeutics. STX is the ticker there. Tim, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin. Good morning.
Yeah, and you raised a decent chunk of change last week, 25 million in the place in there, subscription as well. So we'll talk about that and what it's going to be used for in a bit. Before we do, as always, Tim, if someone's listening and not quite familiar with Shield Therapeutics, explain what the company's about, if you could.
Okay. Shield has a product, the brand name is Accrufer in the US, Ferrocru in Europe. It's a novel oral treatment for iron deficiency, which is a very widespread illness, and it you see it across many disease areas. But what is great about our product is that it is a well-tolerated oral product, and it's been we've shown in clinical studies how effective it is, and therefore it offers potential advantages over the other existing oral products and also over intravenous. So you know we're very excited now about the opportunity to launch this in the States.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and so the fundraise, 25 million at 30 pence. Explain the thoughts behind this and the rationale. What's happening, Tim?
So we decided over the last few months that launching the product in the US could offer our shareholders substantially more value than doing a license deal, which is what we had been looking at. And obviously, to do that, we really needed two things. I mean, first of all, we needed a credible team in the US who could launch the product for us. And we brought some people in that we believe, you know, will be very good at that. We also needed, we estimated $30 to $40 million in order to finance the launch and to take the company through to the point at which the company as a whole is generating cash rather than burning cash. And we estimate that, as I say, that 30 to 40 million will allow us to do that. And within 15 to 18 months' time, we should be able to be self-sufficient. And that's the background to the £25 million raise. We hope also that we can raise up to another £4 million through the open offer that we've announced and is going out with the circular today. So all told, you know, around £29 million will give us $40 million or so to launch the product.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. And like I said, was it lots of demand for the placing? Or was it okay?
Yeah, we had, I haven't sort of actually totaled them up, but we probably had 20 or more new investors come in. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we were very pleased. There's a lot of interest in the opportunity. And I think the investors in the placing can see the upside.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And just talk us through, if you could, now, next sort of, say 6-12 months, what are you hoping to achieve?
Okay. So, we've got a team of four guys in the US, and we brought them on board in around early November last year. But they'd actually been looking at Aquifer for some time, because they were working for one of the companies that we've been talking to who might have licensed Aquifer from us. So they've actually been looking at Aquifer for a good deal longer than 4 months. So they're well-versed in the product. And they've been doing a lot of preparation over the last, number of months around the supply chain and the logistics. And we have product ready to sell, sitting actually in Europe at the moment, but it's ready to be shipped to the States. It could be there sometime during this month. We've got the logistics all worked out, so how we distribute the product all around the US. We've then looked at market access. How do you get the insurance companies who support a lot of the patients in the US in terms of how they pay for their medicine? We've been talking to them. We've worked out, we think, where the right price level is for this product. We've also been thinking about how do you communicate to the medical community the sort of science, if you like, behind the Aquifer. It's not a particularly complicated story, but nevertheless, you want to be able to explain through key opinion leaders why a product like Aquifer offers advantages over the existing therapies. And then, of course, we've been building up the selling and marketing activities, and we'll be in the next few months, we'll be bringing more people into the company from a Salesforce perspective, from a medical liaison perspective, also some of the back office and marketing. So all of those, now that we've got the cash, or at least once the shareholder meeting takes place in a couple of weeks' time, once we have the cash, we can really let the US team get going, so that we hope that sometime during the second quarter, we will be able to launch the product fully and get going with the selling by the end of the second quarter of this year.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Okay, Tim, well, as always, if someone's listening right now and likes the sound, the progress you're making here, and the potential this place gives you, but are not yet following the story, given three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Shield Therapeutics to their watch list, please.
Okay. Well, I guess I would say that our current market capitalization is underpinned by the deals that we already have with Ferrocrew in Europe and China. So we've got a long patent life. And those deals in those territories will almost certainly cover the today's market cap. So the US is an opportunity over and above that, a very substantial opportunity. And if I just make one comment, we've had a number of sales forecasts in the US provided to us by third parties over the last 18 months. And consistently, they say this product could do $100 million in the third year of from launch. And by years 5 and 6, you could be getting to $300 or $400 million. And this is a 90% gross margin product. So the opportunity for cash generation from the launch of Aquifer, and therefore the upside to the share price, is very, very substantial.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Tim, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Hall, Chief Commercial Officer of Vast Resources, and Marcus Brewster, Vast's new General Manager of its Bite Supply polymetallic mine in Romania. Guys, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Now, before we start and ask you, an update on the progress there and general company as a whole, for people maybe not familiar with Vast, can you just give us a brief summary as to what the business is all about, please?
Sure. Vast Resources is an AIM-listed mining company with polymetallic mining assets in Romania and diamond opportunities in southern Africa.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Marcus, tell us more about your role as brand new role as General Manager of Bait Supply, if you could.
Yeah, so I'll be taking entire responsibility for the operation there, which is obviously safety, mining production, all the way through to deliveries to our offtake partner, and also looking after the resource expansion projects. So I believe this is a new position for Vast. They previously had a mine manager, purely focused on the mining operations, with Craig Harvey, our longstanding chief operating officer, looking after the rest. However, the board and Exco understood that as Vast transitioned by its supply from a development asset into a new producing mine, they needed certain and specific skill sets. And that's where we began discussions a few months ago.
Yeah. Well, take us into that. I mean, you had a specific skill set, like you said, in mind. Could you give us an idea of your experience and why this position and asset sort of appealed to you?
Sure. I've been working as a senior mining professional now for over 20 years. And my background as a general manager has looked at actually two significant turnaround projects, as well as managing technically challenging mining operations. I'm both a geologist and a mining engineer, which gives me a bit of a broader vision, I suppose. And I've worked for both AIM-listed juniors and some of the world's larger mining companies in jurisdictions ranging from southern West Africa through to South America, Southeast Asia, and Eastern Europe. So, I mean, obviously the asset now is at a critical time in its development. I'm really quite excited to be involved at this important stage, not just to get the mine up and running and delivering on its true potential, but I'm also thinking about really what additional value this asset can reveal over the longer term, 5, 10, 20 years. And I really believe this is a truly exceptional asset. And we're really only looking at the tip of the iceberg right now. There's a lot more to discover, I believe.
Okay, yeah. And you guys, you released, Vast released an announcement on Friday updating the market about a revised mine plan. Andrew, could you explain why this was required, please?
Sure. So, as shareholders will know, last year, mining operations at Bytes are commenced in Q3 with first production of concentrate in Q4. It was a massive undertaking, which was frustrated by COVID restrictions and the usual teething problems associated with getting a mine operational. However, despite these issues, we were delighted to be producing again. Operations were being led by Craig Harvey, our COO, who arrived in early September last year. He successfully managed the commissioning of the flotation plants, initial production of concentrate, and preparations for the first delivery to Mercuria in late November last year. After 10 weeks on site managing operations, he left to visit South Africa for a home visit. But due to the escalation of the COVID-19 pandemic in South Africa, he was unable to get back to site until the last working day in January this year. So during this time, mining production and sales continued, and management were satisfied with the mine's performance, and cash flow forecasts would be broadly in line with the forecasted cash generation to Q3 this year. After Craig's arrival on site, he, together with the board, undertook a full operational audit of Bytes supply, which was completed at the end of last month. The findings of this report highlighted that there were a number of operational issues which needed to be resolved, and these issues have had an impact on the first few months of initial production at Bytes. So this prompted the announcement on Friday, which advised that the Q4 2020 and Q1 2021 production was going to be lower than the previous guidance, but that the overall production for the guidance period through to Q3 2022 could be exceeded through the implementation of this new mine plan. And the move to modern mechanized mining methods was something that was already intended. However, due to the recent experience at Bytes, this process has been brought forward and accelerated. And one of the reasons for the reduced output of processed ore in Q1 this year is due to the work that's going to be required to prepare the underground for the larger mining equipment. And Marcus is going to be best placed to talk around that new plan.
Yeah, well, talk us about that. What it means for you then, Marcus? What does it involve?
So in simple terms, really, the mine plan moves away from what we've seen as a very labour-intensive, low-productivity mining method, and we're moving to a more modern, safer and mechanised route, which will improve both the productivity and efficiency of mining. And obviously, to prepare for that, Vast has acquired three additional underground LHDs, or scoop trams, which will bring it to four. And a jumbo face drilling rig, which also has a long hole capability for stoping or mining of the ore blocks, and rock bolting as well to make the ground safe. So multi-purpose machine. Obviously, the efficiencies and productivity improvements brought by this equipment is obviously the scoop trams have a much bigger bucket size than the current equipment being used in pneumatic loaders that are currently being used. And also the jumbo drill can do a lot more in a single shift than the handheld drill rigs can. We're talking approximately 10 times more, therefore allowing more opportunity for the LHDs to be used more productively as well. And as the mining teams are trained and become familiar with the equipment, I would expect this to improve further. It's also a much safer way of mining. There are less people involved. They spend less time in the work areas. And they work from the protective cabs of the equipment as well, so it's a lot safer. Yeah. In order to accommodate the scoops and the jumbos, we're just having to reprofile the underground galleries to take the LHDs, and we're accelerating the decline development to get into the other areas of the ore bodies too. So there's a lot of work going on around that too. So we're also looking at some sorting or concentration technology. We've taken some samples and we're just waiting for that test work to get back before we can move forward on that. But that's something we're also looking at.
Yeah, yeah. And will this new mine plan and the new production guidance, will it impact the financing discussions going on?
So, yeah, just to clarify on financing. Yeah. So the asset-backed finance discussions with the bank that ended with them not proceeding in January this year under our current corporate structure was not, and is not related to Baitsa and the performance of the mine so far. These discussions didn't progress because of factors totally unrelated to Baitsa and indeed unrelated to Romania. I wanted to point that out because I know that some investors have been asking if this was a red flag, and it's not, and was not. But the mine plan that we're now putting in place will, over the longer term, certainly enhance the production at Baita Ply and improve the overall parameters for the negotiations with not just the bank, but also other lenders who we're in discussions with. Importantly, from an asset-backed debt point of view, debt investors are focused on the long-term productivity of assets over the term of a financing, which, based on standard terms, is circa 3 to 4 years. And so looking at that, Baitsa over the next 3 to 4 years and indeed beyond looks increasingly positive from an asset-backed debt perspective. However, we of course recognise that not everyone has got those time horizons for investment. And I'm talking specifically of our register of private investors whom collectively hold a significant proportion of our shares. Friday's announcement is going to have been disappointing to a lot of people, and indeed it's not the upbeat first report on production that we were hoping to issue. However, these issues have been identified quickly, and we remain excited about the opportunity that Baitsa represents, really coupled with the fact that we've now got Marcus on board to oversee its development. So with all of those things taken into account, I'm sure that we're going to make up the reported shortfall.
Yeah.
And importantly, you know, we also maintain a good cash position, even taking into account the acquisition of the new equipment. We're continuing to make sales to our offtake partner, and we're able to capitalize on the very strong commodity prices, which we will expect to benefit from as the new mine plan is implemented.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like, Marcus, you're a busy few weeks, months ahead. Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I am actually. I mean, it is a busy few weeks, but it's par for the course. That's mining, and I'm really looking forward to really get stuck in. And I'm confident that what needs to be done will be done. And from my view, this certainly isn't a disaster. We've got a bit of operational flexibility of the equipment, I believe, and it's an incredibly compelling project. We have a fair wind in terms of obviously strong metals prices and a huge amount of historic investment sunk in by the previous developers. And I think Baita Supply will. We could quickly come into its own and start delivering an impressive performance for our shareholders.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, three reasons then, if someone's listening right now and likes this revised money plan and what you're doing, you guys coming on board and the plans you're setting out, but are not yet following the story. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Vast Resources to their watch list, please.
Sure. So I think Vast have made the difficult transition from explorer to producer. Second, with a strong cash position, even with the acquisition of new equipment. And finally, the majority of our cash flows are generated by the sale of copper concentrates with gold and silver credits three metals, which are experiencing high pricing and demand is set to continue. So it's going to be something that we'll directly benefit from.
Marvellous stuff, guys. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. Journal.
Very good morning, Just, from a sunny south coast. Fantastic weekend, just out there walking the dogs, enjoying the sunshine, and I've actually got suntan.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It was nice. We went out and took the kids to the park and took the dog for a walk, and it was almost like it's symbolic, because we understand there's a roadmap now out of this lockdown because of the vaccines, and yet it seems like there's light at the end of the tunnel, but it was very light and sunny yesterday, and I tell you what, it's very busy out in the parks. There's a lot of people out, you know, which I'm a bit sort of worried about. We have to slow down a little bit. We're coming out of this. Let's not go hell for leather and go crazy and start socialising and get back to normal, because as yet we need to vaccinate a few more people, I think. But, was there a lot of people out with you?
Yeah, there were. Well, of course, I think it's 20 million have now been vaccinated, which is pretty damn good. I mean, that's quite some achievement. But certainly where we live, right on the edge of, not on the edge, but close to Seaford Head, and of course, dog walkers out in force. They can't play golf on the golf course there yet. But we've got South Barn just up the road, and literally cars just parked all the way, so thrumming with people. So yeah, I do worry that perhaps people are getting out and you know, getting mixing too early and socialising too early. But of course, the pubs aren't open yet, so everyone's got to go somewhere. And I think on a sunny day, you know, this sort of weather, you're going to see more people out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more stuff. Cool. Okay, let's get the stocks. What are you talking about?
Right. Okay. You've done some videos on this, which I've noted with interest, and we've spoken about this before. On the market, OTMP is the epic code. And
I did one yesterday, actually. Just looking at Rightmove and on the market, and on the market's growing. Rightmove's not. I think they've hit their peak, and they do a bit of a topple because there's a lot of competition out there. On the market, it's growing. And in fact, I don't think, I can't, obviously, Zoopla's not public, is it? So I can't get the figures for those. But last time I saw, they weren't growing either. The only one growing is on the market, you know?
Yeah, I think, and they are really, really sort of making progress. I mean, the company put out a year-end trading and operating update last week, which I think you covered. But you've got revenues now of 23 million. I think they're expecting 22.5, and it's now 23 million. That's up from 18.8 million previously. A pre-tax profit of 2.3 million. That's from a 9.2 million loss previously. So that's a big step forward. They're now profitable. And of course, they're ending the year with net cash of 10.7 million, and the rate of progress continued into January. They delivered 1.8 million new leads, you know, which is an incredible number, considering. But of course, this is the time of year when everyone's looking to either move or sell their house or whatever, so perhaps not such a surprise. And of course, the company have no borrowing, so it's a debt-free company. Jason Tebb, who stepped in as CEO, formerly from Ultimate Holdings and LSL Property Services, and Chesterton's, I think Foxton's as well at some point. He said that he expects the marketing spend to return to normal as the year goes forward. And of course, we've also seen quite a few issues of equity and extra shares being issued. These are, of course, to the estate agents that are have actually got ownership in this business. And I think that's the USP that On the Market has, which is why we are continuing to see this company grow and others, as you say, like Rightmove, fall in value. And Rightmove delivered its full year results, and these numbers are really telling. I mean, revenues fell 29% to 205 million. The operating profit fell 37% to 13.5 million. Earnings per share down 36%. They paid a final dividend, ending the year with net cash of 96 million versus 36 million previously. So that's a positive for them. So I guess you could say that they've just about got enough cash in the bank to buy on the market now, because if I were running Rightmove, I'd be looking to gain market share any which way, and on the market market seem to have the right model right now. So will there be a takeover? I don't know. But either way, as I said before, Rightmove still has this incredible valuation. I can't see that lasting, but I think we're on the market right now. You know, we're trading with a market cap of just 78 million. Shares are traded as high on there as 145p, and we're currently at 110 pence. So plenty of scope for upside, plenty of growth potential this year, and of course the company will probably one day pay a dividend too.
Mm. Well, it's odd, if you look at the valuations on the market, Rightmove are valued 66 times that of on the market. Yet, but their revenue is only 9 times that of on the market. Their advertisers, you say they got 19,000 Rightmove. On the market, it's got 14,000, so not hugely behind them. And if you look at the price charge, it's ridiculous. Like on the market average, if you look at 14,000, average the charge per advertiser per month is 136 quid. On the market, it's 778 quid. But that's only lower because they give discounts due to COVID. That's normally £1,000 a month. So suddenly, seven and a half times pretty much what they charge thing. And yet, they're valued on 24 times revenue, Rightmove, whereas on the market, it's only valued on 3 times revenue. So there's a big gap in between that, you know? So I said, listen, if I did a forecast on the video yesterday, and I said, if Rightmove do 20% a year growth, which is... They can do that. He did that. He did 22% in a COVID pandemic year. So, you know, and that's with discounts as well. They can grow at 20% a year, pretty much. By 2025, they'd be valued at, and this is on 10 times revenue, not 24 times, but above the 3 times. But it's, you know, still way less than Rightmove. So 10 times revenue. They should be valued at sort of close to 9 times what the current valuation is. And so it's close to a 10 bagger over the next 5 years if they keep doing what they're doing. And it's not a big ask because a chunk, I think about a third maybe, of those agents are on discounted or free tariffs, the introductory tariffs.
All they have to do COVID free listings,
All they have to do is convert those. And when you're getting, like I said, leads of 146 leads per advertiser per month, which Rightmove is only 170, so 146 per. It's value for money, you know. I'd pay 136 quid than say a grand and get those kind of leads. So it just makes sense, you know. So I don't think it's a big ask for them to carry on growing, you know.
I think it's, well, if there can be such a thing as a slam dunk, it is, because the company has no debt. It's got cash in the bank. So is Rightmove, come to that. But I also think that as well that, as you rightly pointed out, you know, the others aren't making progress in this market. Rightmove are still the market leader, but on the market are encroaching on their territory.
But, the thing is, Rightmove can't make progress, really. They hit headroom. You know, there's no more headroom for them. They've charged in the maximum they can. Pretty much. They've got all the agents they can, and a lot of those are not happy with the price they charge. They can't... How are they going to grow? I don't see how they can't anymore. But with on the market, they've got plenty of room to grow. They're not charging. They're charging about a seventh of what Rightmove are charging. They haven't got the agents. They've got a lot of agents just on discounted contracts anyway. So there's plenty of growth within, you know, their framework there, whereas Rightmove can't really. They're top of the market. It's priced up. It's all priced in, you know.
So, well, the only way Rightmove can grow is through acquisition, and you'd have to argue that of all the targets out there, Zoopla and the others on the market, as the growing force within the sector, has to be the target. And at the moment, you know, if they have 96 million in cash versus the current market cap of 78 million for on the market, then you know, they could probably go and offer a premium and pick them up now. But I suspect that Jason Tebb will be asking probably 5 to 10 times the market cap that they're on now for any acquisition.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Cool. Okay, anything? What's next, Al?
Okay, want to go now to lithium, Bacanora Lithium. The story of lithium, as we know, it's the metal that's powering the new revolution in the battery industry, these battery gigafactories that are springing up all over the world, and of course the electric vehicle industry. And we're seeing, you know, manufacturers like Jaguar draw a line in the sand and say we're going to be electric only from 2025. That's just 4 years away. That's no time at all. Ford, one of the world's biggest auto manufacturers, they they're going completely electric by 2030. That's 9 years away. Still no time at all in the grand scheme of things. So on the back of that, if we take a look at the lithium price, I'm looking at the lithium chart at present. Lithium was trading at $39,000 a ton in November last year. It's just hit $70,000 a ton, so it's absolutely rocketed. And this is the price globally. There was a big news article about the price of lithium rising in Japan, in China over the new year. And of course, this is it's driven by this demand. And of course, there are other component metals like nickel, like cobalt, like copper, and of course graphite, which makes up probably 50% of the weight of a lithium ion battery. So Bacanora Lithium is the company I'm looking at in regard to this. They are developing one of the world's largest resources for lithium carbonate. That is the Sonora Lithium Project in Mexico. And this has been quite a protracted, drawn out process in regard to getting permissions, developing the mine asset, and developing the Sonora asset, and a full scale feasibility study to establish the potential there. So what we know now is that Sonora contains one of the larger deposits in the world, 8.8 million tons of lithium resources, gives the asset a net present value of somewhere in the region of $1.25 billion dollars. But with the infrastructure there and with the plans that they have to develop and build the mine, it's going to cost them about 4,000 tons in terms of operating costs, and that's one of the lowest operating costs anywhere in the world. So, as you can see, with lithium now at $70,000 a ton, that's going to be a hugely profitable venture. And this, of course, has not gone unnoticed by farming partners Ganfeng. Ganfeng is the world's largest lithium metals producer. Ganfeng have invested heavily into the Sonora project, sort of via Bacanora Lithium, and they've currently completed a $65 million fundraise and announced last month that, of course, site work was starting at the Sonora Lithium Project, aiming for first production in 2023. Some big shareholders, of course, Ganfeng is the biggest at 17.4%. Also, the investment group M&G have just under 16%. Once this moves to production, we'd expect the valuations to change substantially, but nonetheless, the Bacanora is one of the best lithium assets I think to invest into currently. Bacanora currently has a market cap of 145 million. Shares are traded as high as 69p on the year, as low as 14 pence, and currently trading at 44 pence. So, as of yet, the share price doesn't, to me, seem to reflect the sudden sharp upward move in lithium. So, looking at the chart here, I think the share price will probably catch up and reflect that sharp move by lithium over the next few months. But either way, at the current levels, I think it offers a great investment if you're looking to get into EV and battery metals investing.
Mm-hmm. I think, in fact, a company I covered yesterday, was it Bacanora? No, Ilika, for example, the company. Do you know Ilika? Are you aware of
yes.
Ilika?
Yeah.
Solid-state batteries. I think the CEO, Graham Purdy, if I'm right, he joined the board of Bacanora, actually, because there's lithium, of course, in the batteries. And it's good that he's got, a sort of a foothold. Where is it? I'm sure it's Bacanora. I'm trying to scroll down and see. Yeah, I'm sure it was, but... let me scroll. Yes, that's right. CEO is Graham Purdy of Ilika has been appointed to the board as an NED of Bacanora, because of course the supply chain there is critical in batteries. So and of course, it's only going to be one. I mean, let's be honest. There are other types. There's hydrogen. There's other types of renewable energy. But EVs is the dominant player, isn't it? That's what's going to win out pretty much the majority of the market share.
Well, it is, and the amount that auto manufacturers are investing into changing their product lines, into sourcing the materials, it's a sea change. The internal combustion engine, it stays a number. It's not history yet by any means, but those days are numbered. So the drive globally is to source these battery metals, and Sonora probably is one of the better developed ones. It's further down the road, so everything's in place now. Site construction is underway, so first production expected in 2 years' time. So that's pretty close in evolutionary terms for a mine. But certainly there are other lithium investors. Just to say, of course, Cadence Minerals, KDNC, also has an interest out there with Bacanora. It has an interest in two of the concessions out there owned by the Sonora Lithium Company. So it's got a very exciting future in the coming 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. Cool. What's next, Al?
Finally, we're on to a little gold mining company called Lexington Gold. This is, of course, the former Richland Resources. Name has changed at the end of the year. And I've been following this company. I took a stake in the company last month, and I think it's got a really exciting future. Lexington Gold is, as the name would imply, it's a gold exploration company, and it's operating in South Carolina in the USA, and of course that's a very benign environment. The US encourages mining companies and provides a very positive environment for those companies to operate in. Also, the location of the mining exploration projects are close to highways. They've got good energy, good support services, and so on. And there's quite a bit of history in the area. There was Lexington Gold have four projects. They have the Jones Keystone Laughlin project, the JKL project, and the Jennings Pioneer project, Carolina Belt, and Argo projects, and these are all dotted around South Carolina. One in particular is close to the Barite Hill project. This is the Jennings Pioneer project, and it's actually 600 meters from the Barite Hill mine, which is a producing gold mine, and they believe that the Jennings Pioneer asset is a potential satellite deposit. But today they've announced they've commenced drilling on the Jones or the JKL project. They're drilling six holes. They have producing a 3D model from the information that they've gleaned already through soil sampling and surveys. This is also backed up by some pretty remarkable history over the past 10 to 15 years. There's an asset called the Haile asset, H-A-I-L-E, and this is an old gold mine that was discovered by Ben Haile in 1827. But techniques in those days, he was unable to get the mine or commercialize the mine. It was also mined in First World War for pyrite, which is called sulfuric acid. But in 2008, a company called Ramarco got involved and applying modern mining technologies and methods, grew the asset and sold the asset in 2015 to Oceana Gold for $856 million. So that was quite a return. So, of course, based on that success and based on the fact that up to recently South Carolina was the most prodigious producer of gold in the USA, the company are progressing these four assets. So we're in for an exciting year. We're going to get drilling news from the JKL project shortly. Ed Neelan is the chairman of the group, 46 years experience, founder of Aquarius Platinum and also Sylvania Platinum. Melissa Sturge is also on the board too. Of course, you'll know Melissa also co-founder of Sylvania and Aquarius Platinum. And the CEO, Bernard Olivier, has 13 years experience in the industry, also worked on the team that established the JORC resource for Besant Resources, 3.9 million ounce resource there. So, yeah, it's very much at the early stage. The company's currently worth 10 million sterling, trading as it is at 4p.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. What's the ticker?
Ticker is LEX, so that's London listed.
Okay, yeah, cool. Marvelous stuff. How many stocks do you hold out at the moment?
Goodness me, I've got about 23 stocks at the moment. So I've actually spread. I've done a Malcolm Stacey. I've spread my risk and put it across a lot of small stock, and it's actually working. I think certainly the movements in some of the junior miners this year have been very encouraging. So yeah, 23 and counting.
There's way too many, Al. Way too many.
Well, I think probably a year ago I was less than half of that, but I've just seen opportunities and gone with them, and I've spread the risk, but equally seen opportunity.
You spread the reward as well. Because
spread the risk.
After a while, I saw people arguing about you should have 20, 30 stocks on Twitter, and people like older investors saying you should have all this diversification. Absolute nonsense. So I decided to do a spreadsheet on it, and I thought, do you know what? If you go above 10 stocks, I was looking at equally weighted stocks here, you may as well get a fund. And because first of all, it's hard to keep track of them. Second of all, the more you have, the less chance of reward you're going to have. Yes, you protect yourself against risk, but also you protect against reward. So it's whether you actually do some deep research on a small amount of companies and win better. That in my mind is better way of diversifying or sort of managing risk than having lots of stocks. And if you're going above 10, you may as well buy a fund. Because what you could actually do is buy a fund, like for example Vanguard, that holds 1,000 stocks. So have 50% of your portfolio in one fund, and you can actually go for a 50% of your portfolio in one stock. And that is diversified. That's massively diversified. So when people go, I think when you get above a certain level, it's pointless. Honestly, just look at the maths of it, and I did a spreadsheet on it, and the maths of it says it doesn't. If you've got a huge chunks of money, I understand, and you're a fund manager, maybe, but otherwise, above 10, you may as well have a fund. Just cut down the number of stocks you have. So you have 5 stocks and maybe a fund. And
well, I'd agree with you.
Thanks. Cheers out. but the thing is, there's a but coming, is there? Okay, go on.
Well, for me personally, I, it's got to be tailored to you and how you work. For me personally, as I work in the markets and I'm literally plugged in every day, I'm well able to keep on top of that. So I've got the assets and the tools at my disposal.
Yeah, but what percentage are you holding in these stocks? Because they don't really do anything for you.
Well, what
percentage of your entire portfolio do you have in these stocks? Because of course, you can only have less than 5%, pretty much, or if you're equally weighted. So, to do well out of that, you can have even if one of these stocks it's going to raise your portfolio by 5% or something. What's the point?
I've got a block of funds which are doing well
as well.
I've got a block of funds. I've got a block of FTSE 100 stocks, and then I've got and then the rest are made up of a range of technology and mining stocks, primarily.
But let me say one thing, right? Listen, if you hold, for example, say 20 stocks, right, and one of your stocks, and they're all equally weighted, okay. And one of your stocks does a 10-bagger, which is very hard. They don't come along very often. If you get a 10-bagger, you want to get some reward from that, right? If you own 20 stocks, your entire portfolio will only go up by 50%. So I want more than that. If I get a 10-bagger, I want at least double my portfolio value from one 10-bagger. So that's why you need to go down to 10 stocks. Now, if you triple your portfolio, you have 5 stocks and 1/10 bag, you'll triple the value of your portfolio. So what I'm saying is, you are affecting, and there's no way around that unless you go all in on one stock. Obviously, you don't want to do that. I mean, you've got to look at it because you are blunting your reward, the chances of reward as well as risk. Now, like I said, Buffett said, diversification is protection against ignorance, essentially. If you have lots of stocks, you can't keep over them. You may as well better do a deep delve research on a couple of stocks. And if you want a diversification, buy a fund as well. But really concentrate and get to know those 3 to 5 stocks rather than trying to get to know 23 stocks.
I'd say probably 15 of those I've got very detailed knowledge of, so I'm quite happy to hold them. But also as you get older too, you tend to spread your risk around.
Sod that. Yeah, listen, you want to earn money. That's what you want to do. You want to earn money.
You're a youngster. I'm getting on in age,
I'm not. I'm 50. I'm 50 this year, and you know what? And I know the more research I do in a company, the more I know about the risk. So the more companies you have, the less you know about the risk. And so you don't mind one dropping out. But the thing is, if you actually do a lot of research, it's a good chance one will never do badly. You know, if you look at the right sectors and they've got cash and, you know the management and you've researched it to the inch of its life, you know, you can have a left field thing happen, of course, black swan event, of course. But I mean, generally, the more you know about a company, that's diversification against risk, I think, you know.
Yeah.
I have three stocks in a fund. A fund has 1,000 stocks in it, so you don't need more than that. So you don't need, you know. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think a lot is talked about diversification and the fact that people. No, I've seen people older sort of investors thinking you have to have upward of 20, 30 stocks. No, not for a prime investor. And if you're only a smaller pot of money than starting off, you're going to very, very hard to make any headway, you know, with that amount of stocks. Unless you get a 1,000 bagger or something, you know.
Yeah. But I think my strategy and approach to this just has been to spread the risk, be diverse, because I think diversity is a good thing. I do have knowledge as well, so and.
You don't need that, Al. You don't need that. If someone said to you, Al,
but I'm in the market,
pick your best five stocks. Then you have to do some quality assurance and quality checks, and you go through and you realise, in fact, that one's a bit dodgy. I don't really feel that one. And you know, one is you're really certain on. And then what happens if you cut the? Because you're only going to earn if you are the market, you're just going to earn the market. You know, you're not going to beat the market. So to outperform the market, you have to less the market. You have to, you know, those stocks you're really confident about, you go with those, because that's how you win out. Surely not by having. Because you're worried about, you know, volatility, you have lots of stocks, because that blunts performance as well, you know.
Well, probably through circumstance, I've got a large position in a couple of stocks in another dealing account, which have just come about through circumstance. So, and I'm quite happy to hold that and hold those stocks and take a longer term view, on the basis that you've described, which is to deliver, you know. Well, possibly a two bagger, three bagger, five bagger, whatever, you know, maybe more. But certainly that strategy has served me well. I mean, I grew my portfolio by 37% last year. So, you know, that I'm quite happy with that. And
not with 23 stocks, really. Less than that, though, isn't it? You had less than stocks than that. You started off with half of that.
Yeah, that's right. So that growth probably enabled me to add to that portfolio, and certainly the. Yeah,
but going forward now, that'll be less though. So literally, if you double the amount of stocks you hold, and the holdings sort of equally percentage wise, the same amount in each, pretty much, then that growth you got there will be halved next year.
Well, yeah. But thus far, I've got to go on thus far, and clearly, you know, if there's a correction, I've got a figure in mind that I'm aiming for with a portfolio this year, and if I have to change strategy and sell a block of the stocks off, I'll do that. Equally, if I see an opportunity to add more, then I may well do that too. So it's a moving feast, isn't it? You know, we're talking now. The markets are in the current status they're in today. That could change tomorrow, as you and I well know. Out of a clear blue sky. We could see a change. There was a big bond sell-off last week that spooked the markets, and this sort of thing happens all the time. So you've got to be able to react to it.
The more I think about it, I don't need to react to it. Generally, if you're only good companies, the longer I spend in the market, the less time I think. In fact, you know, trading is a waste of time. It's literally trying to jump in and out. I mean, I did hold quite a bit of cash before the last crash, which to me that was. Even before the pandemic came around, there was signals of overheating and all this stuff was going on. So, and the spreads and the inversion of the curve and all that stuff was happening. So then it was time to be in. The market was quite buoyant. But generally, I think it's trading and trying to guess the market. It's a false economy. If you've got good companies, they'll grow, won't they, over the years?
You're not trying to guess the market. So, you know, I mean... Often I'll buy and sell the same stock because I see it move to a point. You spot a trading pattern, you're in at the bottom and then out of the top, and then the cycle repeats itself. And there are companies that I've seen in the portfolio that will do that. So
you're not a dirty trader, Al, are you? You're not a dirty trader. I think you're a wholesome. I thought you're a wholesome investor.
I'm into trinvesting, which is a combination of trading and investing.
Well, I'm a tech mentalist. You know, I do look at the fundamentals and the charts, but I base my decision on what to buy on the fundamentals and when to buy on the chart.
Always on fundamentals, but because, you know, there is a price disconnect, you know, such as what I believe to be a price disconnect between Bacchanora Lithium and the price of lithium right now. You know, that's but I think the market's probably waiting to see whether that's a sustained.
Do you know what I'm saying, though, just about the amount of stocks you have? And what I'm saying is, Al, if I said to you, pick one stock now in your portfolio you're super comfortable with and you're super happy with and you want to put all your money in, now you'd have to start looking, really start, you know, cutting the wheat from the chaff and look at quality stocks and you think, okay, what am I happy with here? And do you know what I'm saying? And what Warren Buffett said about, you know, diversification is the protection against ignorance. And it is, to a certain extent, because you can be less researched and have more stocks and you'd be okay, but you won't get returns. But do you know what I'm saying? If I said you pick one stock and you really have to pick one stock, you'd do so much research on that one stock, wouldn't you, or on the stocks, that you in the end, you probably sway the odds in your favour that you are going to get a winner there, you know?
I think, but I think there's also, you know, if we're talking about a mining stock, for instance, then you have
Yeah, I wouldn't even look at mining stocks. Ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, I did a video recently on risk and rewards, and I said, listen, anything in certain sectors, avoid oil and gas, and wildcat drills, you know, clinical trials, and maybe resource and mining stocks. Who, in fact, they're not so bad resource stocks, because once you've got mineralization there, it's there. You're not going to, you know, you do a blunt sort of drill dig, you'll sort of get it up. But I mean, with oil, you can miss it completely, you know. So, there are certain sectors. That's what I'm saying. When you have to weigh it up and weigh it up and say, right, what's the risks and rewards here? That would come in as you know, looking at resource stocks. You think, oh, hang on a sec, that's a bit dodgy there.
But I think I think if you're confident enough to jump in and jump out of the stock intraday and also take a position in another stock, maybe an outsized position for the longer term because you've done your research in the fundamentals, then that's great. I think if you know I'm happy to trade and jump in and jump out, and I'm happy to invest and hold as well. So I think having that broadened approach has helped my investing And currently, I'm comfortable with that number of stocks. We'll speak again in a week's time, and that may have changed.
I'll have one stock. I'll have one stock in a fund, like you said.
Stock in a fund? Yeah. No, I've got 30.
Okay, yeah, no, 150 stocks. Yeah, okay, cool. Marvellous. Cool, Al. Good to have a chat with that. But, you know, we'll speak to you next week, Al. Cheers, man.
Speak next week. Cheers, Jess.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. It's been a rollercoaster ride for number one, but at five, Braveheart Investment Group down 26%, 73.5. At four, Eve Sleep up 21% to 6.8. At two, My Health Checked up 26% to 4.1. At two, Fragrant Prosperity Holdings up 4% to 6.2. And at one, Cellular Goods, it IPO'd like crazy last week. And then I hope people didn't buy the spike there, but it's come back quite a bit there. It's down 20% day. That CBX ticker, a lot of these cannabinoid plays are quite hot, so a bit jumping on them. But be careful, you know, be careful there. Don't buy the spike, whatever you do. Okay, top five most liked analysts come from Horizontal Minerals, appointment of head of projects, Tulu Energy, finance progressing with key funding partner, Equals, a partnership at TAP Global, with TAP Global, 4D Pharma, John Beck appointed as Chief Financial Officer, and at one, Alien Metals, drilling commences at Donovan 2 project. Let's look at those most liked, and sometimes the most red is quite different, so I'll have a look at the most red as well. 4D Pharma, Fast Forward Innovations, new investment in consumer cannabinoid company. There's another one. At 4, Braveheart, further update, Peritech Limited. At 2, Gritland Gold, issue of shares. But Gene Drive is number one investor presentation. Check those lists out at voxmarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.